Hi, everyone. This is Off Meta, a podcast about Star Wars, X-Wing, and everything I really care about. I'm Steven, a.k.a. Raythos, your host, and today I'm joined by Ryan Farmer. Ryan is a historically famous X-Wing player, a former podcaster, and a generally human being, a generally beautiful human being, but who has decided to not show his face today, and I'm so mad about it. How you doing, Ryan?
I'm great. Thanks for a few things. One, thanks for calling me a general human being. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thanks for not including a certain nickname that I've hoped to shed in my post-podcast days. And thanks for calling me a great X-Wing player, because historically speaking, that has not really been true.
Well, I actually don't think that is. I think so. First of all, I think that the length of time or the skill level of you're at is like a peak. It's not like your average across all time. It's like whatever you are, whatever you were at your best, right?
That's my opinion
because it's like, you know, last week we had Paul Heaver on, and
right.
He's a legendary player, you know, three-time world champion, but like, is he as good now as he was back then? You could make the argument that he's not, right? But that doesn't mean that you don't consider him at his current skill level. You consider him at the peak because he's goated, right? He always...
He is. I mean, yeah, it's always that when you talk about sports, right? The best versus greatest conversations too. Like, yeah. I'm not sure if I would say that Paul's the best X-Wing player of all time. He certainly could be, right? Mm-hmm. But there's a conversation for best, but I certainly do think he's the greatest X-Wing player of all time.
Yeah. Yeah. So last week, I mean, you haven't heard it, but, cause it's not live yet. It will be live. I mean, you're going to be the one after him. So you have a lot of big shoes to fill in terms of the follow up. But one of the big things that we were talking about is like Paul Heaver versus Duncan Howard. And like, who's the better X-Wing player? So there is a poll that is going to go live. And hopefully by the time that this podcast comes out, we'll have known the results of what the X-Wing community thinks of that question.
You know what's funny about that, though, is like, obviously, Paul and Duncan know each other. They're good friends. It's really the one thing that I always struggled with when I was casting is getting in these like personality battles too, because there's so many X-Wing players and so many people out there that play the game and enjoy the game that don't personally know Paul or personally know Duncan, and we name drop all this stuff all the time, and you know, I do personally know Paul and Duncan, but it's like I don't think anyone should ever be striving to be a personality or like a big name or anything, and in fact I think there are a plethora of insanely good and even great X-Wing players that nobody knows about or don't have that kind of name behind them, you know?
Oh, that's definitely true. I mean, the fact is that there's a lot of amazing, incredible X-Wing players, and the only reason why we hear about Duncan and Paul and, you know, those level of players are because they've been around for such a long time. Right.
And I mean, it's fair to say, too, that Duncan and has had great success doing a lot of things. And Paul has also seen insane success. Their trophies and their accolades are through the roof. Like if we're studying a hobby, one of my favorite videos is there's a fan made documentary on the history of Super Smash Brothers Melee. Mm-hmm. That's one of my favorite internet things. Mm-hmm. And it always rubbed me resonated with me in that it felt very much early on like X-Wing has felt like a community that is not that big, because when you get down to it, X-Wing competitively is not that big of a community compared to something like Magic or Pokemon or, you know, Warhammer, right? Like the people at the top, they all know each other. There's, you could call it incestuous even in terms of how the friendships develop. But mm-hmm. I definitely don't want that ever to dissuade people from getting into the game or trying to break in and be a part of the community.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that a little bit. So you have had an incredible influence on that community for a long time. and then decided to retire, hang up your jersey, so to speak.
Well, hang up the podcasting jersey, I guess you could say. I wouldn't say that the cleats are gone quite yet for playing the game.
Well, sure. I meant more the community support, not so much the right. competitive playing, because you have a world invite. I have a world invite. We're gonna see each other at Worlds. I hope it's gonna be a great time, right?
It should be great, yeah.
but I'm like really interested because I think a lot of people for a lot of people like because you and I we know each other, so like obviously we have a deeper conversation about this type of stuff. But I think for a lot of people who saw your podcast end, and for people who are new, there's like going to be people who are going to watch or listen to this episode that don't know, because it will have been enough time, or they will have joined at a point where the podcast had been stopped long enough that it just never goes into their field of vision. But Ryan Farmer was the host of the Fly Better podcast, formerly the Minox Squadron podcast, for many, many, many years, and was one of the real pillars of the community, actual pillar, like not a lip service like kind of thing. Oh, you're a pillar of community, but legitimately was holding X-Wing up on his massive, massive shoulders, in many, many ways that like that people weren't even aware of, I think. And I think that it's really interesting because when in 1.0, when we switched over to 2.0, we had a lot of people leave, kind of do the same thing that you did, like retire, right?
I would say content creation wise, yeah. I think a lot of content creators in the transition from the first edition to the second edition decided, this is a good natural stopping point for the game for me. Then we got a lot of really great new content creators too that popped up in its wake. And that's sort of, you are now a great, excellent content creator. Not that you haven't been for a while as a major impact, but Jordan, who made yet another Squad Builder 1.0, stopped supporting it. And then you came in to fill in. And that's just what's great about the community, right? Is, as one, facet leaves, another one hopefully rises to, fill in shoes.
Yeah. So then like, and obviously like, we could circle jerk each other off all night and I would be really happy about that. But what I really want to know is like, what was the thing that made you decide, I'm good. I know some of it because like, you got married and that kind of stuff. But there must have been something that pull on you to say like, I've done enough. I've completed the body of work that I want to complete, right? Like, what was that? Was that the feeling, or what was it exactly?
So it's a few things, and I can be candid and frank about it. I very much enjoy X-Wing. I love the game. I think it's in terms of game design wise, and this is not just me blowing smoke up AMG's butt, like. I think the design of the game is at its peak and the enjoyment for me playing the game has never been higher, but I have different priorities with my free time now than I had. We had an 8-year run, D-Yoon and I, and then, Dallas Parker was in there for a bit. Brad Miller was in there for a bit. You've been in there, an insane run, but there are a few things that are tough. One, the weekly nature of the show was getting a little hard, and I felt just an insane amount of pressure, not even when I was recording, just keeping up with what was happening in the game for content, the news, the outside the game meta. Like, I love X-Wing, but I felt the homework was becoming a pretty significant mental drain from week to week. And I think D felt the same. And we both were getting to the point where we had kind of run out of things to say that we felt were impactful. And there's only so many hot takes you can do that make you feel like you're contributing in some way to the game. And then even beyond that, I think I was getting, I never set out when I was podcasting to be any sort of community leader or, you know, pillar or anything like that. We, in the early days, we were just trying to do a podcast that represented a fairly substantial SoCal meta and only talk about that because regionally there was nothing available there. And we had so many people. I mean, we, at one point, we had a 150 person store championship in the 1.0 days, and we were just underrepresented. So D and I were like, let's just talk about that. And we just kept growing by mistake. we can never set out to make any money or do anything like that. And there's a certain amount of exhaustion to trying to be the kind of person I want to be and have the strain of being, I guess, seen as a community leader, because I'm fairly introverted, contrary to what you might think. And, you know, there were some tough times where, you know, especially when AMG took over, where I was attempting to moderate and keep a community together that really didn't want to, a vocal chunk of it didn't want anything to do with me or anything that I had to say. And there were some really hurtful, you know, messages and really hurtful things said that I'm not going to say that that's what drove me out by any means, because I don't really believe in people bullying
but didn't help
others into silence. But it definitely made me feel as though, like, okay, I think that there are a lot of really good pillars in the community still. I think, you know, I could list off a big list of names, but I won't. I just felt an immense amount of anxiety, pressure, exhaustion in continuing doing that when it, and I, the big change for me was it was overtaking my enjoyment of playing X-Wing. And I always said with D, I would stop podcasting. I would stop it when it was no longer enjoyable for me, or it was causing me to not enjoy the game. And I just couldn't even play anymore. I was focusing so much on all this other stuff. I was barely getting any reps in. And I couldn't focus on the stuff I wanted to focus on. So all that, you know, that was a long-winded response, but a lot of that was, I feel like I've left everything that ever, a lot of positive things behind. And I was able to go out on, not go out, but end the podcast on terms that I felt good about.
Right. And you feel, and now it's been, you know, several months later, and I has that felt like the right decision? I mean, I guess it was the right decision for you, the way that you've described it, but like, do you feel like mentally and like kind of like rejuvenated in the game in that sense now?
There's now that this weight is sort of off of me, you know, XTC has been going on, and it was so nice to not need to have to go through every single one of those lists, follow that as closely as I had in the past, set up interviews. It was good for me to just be like, okay, what stuff do I want to play, and things that I don't even like need to worry about talking about on the podcast or explaining myself or justifying a decision. Like, it's nice that I could play something, and if I scrub out, nobody will know or care. Like, I can just go back to just being anonymous and doing what I want. And I think that actually had a really distinct impact on my play, because I was able to win a store championship, you know, pretty quickly, but I felt like I was it was more fun to play because there wasn't this weird personality pressure behind me. I guess it's hard to explain.
Are you saying that you watch Naruto? Have you watched Naruto?
I have.
You know Rock Lee?
Yes. Yeah.
So
yeah.
this is the, you've removed the weight of the X-Wing community on your back, and now you can run at full speed.
I mean, sort of. I mean, obviously, it makes it sound so much more negative than it actually is. You know that I have, for the most part, a pretty big adoration of the X-Men community as a whole, aside from, you know, I don't know what language is allowed on this cast.
We're being clear. Oh, you can swear if you want. I'll just make it explicit. I don't give a shit.
There are a bunch of assholes in the community. Like, I'm just going to say it. Like, there are a bunch of assholes, a bunch of people that just want to cause trouble and cause ruckus. And you know, and some of that is politically charged and some of it isn't. I've made no secrets on the podcast about where I lie on certain issues and certain things. And I, you know, screw them. Like, if they didn't like what I had to say, is, you know, is where I fell on that.
I mean, that's fair. You know what, too, is that, like, I mean, that was such a weird time. Like, if you're trying to recall back, that it was like 2019. We just come off of this like incredible Worlds experience, like the best. It was my first Worlds, so I didn't have any kind of like context, but I assume from everyone who was talking about it, this was the best X-Wing Worlds that there had been at that point, right?
I can't even express. There would be nothing like it again, because if they're just going to keep doing it at Adepticon, it was in, for those of you who don't know, Worlds 2019 was in this massive gymnasium. Like, it was huge. It was, they like FFG, Fantasy Flight Games, who had the game, who was running the game before Atomic Mass Games, just pulled out all the stops for this thing. It really felt like a send-off, kind of. That we didn't know it at the time, but it was incredible. And I remember it more distinctly than any of the other Worlds that I've been to, which is quite a few.
Okay. So you wanna know something really kind of like maybe exciting for you? Since you weren't at 2020 Worlds because you were getting married. Or 2022 Worlds because you were getting married.
Right. This most recent. Yeah. Wedding was like right then, so I couldn't.
Yeah, yeah. So because you weren't there, so I have the context of having been to both the 2019 and the 2022. I personally felt that the 2022 Worlds was better than 2019 Worlds.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. Yeah. Super interesting. And so it was a similar experience, because actually, like, the thing about the 2019 Worlds is that it felt very much like a con experience, except it wasn't a con because it was just only those four X-Wing events, or the four Star Wars events, right? So it felt like a con experience without it actually being a con, right? And Adepticon is a con, but it's also like really casual, because like you only have to pay if you're actually participating in events, and walking through is free. So it kind of had the same kind of like vibe. But then the event was actually better run, because like Chris Allen was running it, and he had this whole like manifesto about, you know, the Swiss format and all that stuff, and he was implementing that in the Worlds format. And so it ended up being that no day was longer than five games ever, and that you would be able to start and finish the day at a reasonable time, which meant that from a multi-day tournament experience was like so much more manageable, right? I remember like 2019 Worlds was really rough, because like, especially for me, because I had the last chance qualifier in, which was like a 12-hour tournament, and then roll right into day one of the event. And even if you played in day one of the event, that was still like, you know, a 10-hour event, six games with like breaks and all these like problems. And so the actual tournament experience was like really not great, even though the overall experience was really good.
I mean, I'm really hyped to go to Worlds this year and just experience it. Though it seems like Crisis Protocol will be having an event that overlaps with X-Wing. So I actually do have some tough choices to make, because I'm a big Marvel Crisis Protocol player as well.
Sure. Can you do, because I think they're going to have multiple like separate days as well, potentially, for X-Wing.
Yeah, it very much depends on how the MCP event's structured, because they're like saying it's either a 2 or 3 day event, mm-hmm. not like different heats. So we'll see. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I can do both, I'll do both. But if I can only do one, It'll be a tough choice, because I adore both games.
Of course. Well, I mean, I think that obviously personally, I want you to take X-Wing, because that's...
Sure.
I want to see us both make cut and then be like face each other in top eight. That would be dope.
I mean, it would be magical, but I you know, being realistic about what I'm doing with my free time and, you know, how I'm enjoying a lot of my painting hobbies, I just don't think I will end up putting in the necessary reps to be an insanely good X-Wing player. Like, I will do what I can, obviously, but I feel that my time as a hyper competitive player has very much come to an end.
You know what's interesting about that is, so I feel like nowadays X-Wing is less about so you still have to put in reps, right? But sure. There's a lot less tournament prep. It's a lot less about tournament prep and a lot more about muscle memory and game knowledge. So
I would be inclined to agree on that, but I, you know, in terms of meta observation, but I would also say that, you know, getting reps with list construction under certain scenarios and having a plan is still very important.
Well, so yes and no. So here's my take on this is that if you have spent, okay, so in my case, I've spent basically the better part of a year and a half to 2 years playing essentially one type of list. I played a different version of it at Worlds, but essentially it's the same kind of format. It's basically low ship resistance aces. And the current version of my list is basically my 2019 Worlds list, right? So I have like this deep kind of understanding of the list itself. And all of my kind of like play time has been really just focused on the tactics of like different scenarios and kind of like practicing,
right,
making on the fly decisions that are like, you know, make sense. And so building up that repertoire. So again, it's like, I think reps are important, but I think the thing that's different between a previous world's like preparation experience and this one is that it's not as important to have like a game plan against like every specific type of meta list that comes up. Oh, well, how is my turn zero placement? You can make a lot of those decisions on the board without any prep work, right? But what you do need is enough reps under your belt, like regular play, so that those skills of like making those determinations don't get rusty, right? And then obviously the more games you play, the more sharp that gets. Like you can hone it like a fine blade to make it so that you're not only are you making the great decisions, but making the best possible decision in the moment based on the information that you have, right? And that's the difference. And I think that speaks to your strength, right? Because like you're in your podcast, you would constantly remind us that, you know, what you like doing is the, you know, kind of on the board tactics and less the strategic planning part, right? And I feel like the strategic planning is gone.
The strategic planning was always the weakest part of my game, I think.
Right.
I felt I was a little stronger at on the board tactics as stuff. And I think that also speaks a little more to my sports background, like in the moment thinking and plan adjustments and win con updating in my head. I've always strived to be as good of a player as I can be, but I feel like for the most part in my game, I was pretty good at was not shooting myself in the foot and not making mistakes that were unnecessary. And, you know, some players are really great strategically and they get on the table and they make sometimes blunderous mistakes. D is, I think, an incredible strategic player and an incredible strategic thinker. And I think that he doesn't make a ton of on the table mistakes, but as he's gotten a little older, he has become a bit susceptible to missing something here and there.
But let's not talk about that stinky boy because this is my podcast.
Sure.
the animosity continues between us.
Just creating a comp, right? I think because he and I are to approach the game in very, very different ways.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So coming back to the Worlds topic, like I feel like as long as you're playing regular games, which it sounds like you kind of are anyways, in some capacity, like I feel like you will have as good a chance as any this year of making a top cut if you pick the right list that is like kind of like in your wheelhouse and you keep your skills sharp. Because I don't think
I'll probably just pick whatever thing is performing the best, if I'm being honest, like as Worlds. But it depends on what the most recent release is. And it seems like, at least based on what we've heard, the only thing we're getting before Worlds, which is sort of sad in some ways, would be that next Battle of Endor pack. And if that's the case, and maybe one more points update with it, who knows what the meta will look like by then.
Well, I think in general, like we shouldn't assume that we know what the meta is going to look like half a year away, right? Like that seems ridiculous. Like no one's going to be starting their Worlds planning right now, right? People are going to be, again, like thinking about lists that they want to put together and like just trying to get good at the game. Like Sword Champ season is like the focus, right? So they want to like win their invite, right? But I think realistically, whatever that you're getting good at,
if you wanted to like have the best chance of success for Worlds, like in your state where you don't want to necessarily like, you know, like think about every single list and like try to like, it's just kind of like build, play to an archetype that is very familiar to you and then just like continue to focus on that archetype, right? So like for you, like, you know, like some sort of rebel list around Keo would be like really great because I know you love that pilot, right?
Keo's incredible.
Right. Or, you know, you could fly my list because I know that you like my dumb jank. So
it is quite good.
I have built a new list. I built a new list around Lando, Resistance Lando, Joff Sea Striker, Soft Striker, whatever his name is, Joff, and Taka. And I have made the most ridiculous list. I will share it to you after this podcast, and if there's a huge demand from the community, I'll share it publicly. But I've made this really kind of gross list that is doing surprisingly well, and it's jank. It's full on jank, but I also think it's like competitive.
I love good jank, you know.
That's, you know what, that's one of the things that like I kind of miss about our conversations is, or lack of conversations is, as you've become too busy, is I just like our little shares of like, hey, look at this dumb shit. Because it's just fun.
It's always funny with X-Wing 2, and this is with a lot of games. Like, when is your dumb shit actually good? A lot of people will say, well, bad is bad. And I do agree. However, I think that X-Wing in particular, given how objectives are, there's the really good stuff. But I think really good players can find off-meta stuff that... Mm-hmm. performs really well that you could say in a vacuum like, oh, that's jank, until it starts doing really well, then it ceases to become jank. I think there's a lot of squads that start out as like, well, that's sort of dumb, and then people figure out how it works and then it's not jank anymore. But I think a lot of squads start out as jank, you know what I mean?
Yeah So this is a great time for me to segue into our ad read, which is basically the bit that I do. And feel free to jump in. Because you're doing it on the fly, you're not prepped like me, I don't expect you to have anything. But if you do, I'm pretty sure I'm going to put up a leaderboard of like who can come up with the most bits. So anyways, this podcast is brought to you by dumb shit, because we can never know when it becomes good. And this podcast is also brought to you by assholes. They're in the X-Men communities, and screw them. Anything from your side? Because I'm going to keep going otherwise.
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. And this podcast is also brought to you by Hot Takes. So many hot takes that you can have and you can feel like you're contributing. And finally, this podcast is brought to you by the Smash Brothers community, which is like the early X-Wing community, kind of. Okay.
Yeah. This podcast is brought to you by the SoCal X-Wing community, which used to be really big.
There we go. You got your one. Any more?
No, I think I'm good.
Okay.
I think I'm good. I could also say this podcast is literally brought to you by another four-eyed Asian friend. It seems like I can't get away from them when podcasting.
Yeah. What's up with that? Just like you gotta hang around them Asians, you know? That sounds racist, but I'm Asian, so it's okay.
I mean, that's the joke, right? You and D are basically the same.
Hey, we are not the same. He's a stinky boy, and yeah, I am a fresh smelling man. So, okay.
All the baby powder on your hands, right?
You know, I always deodorize. You know, it's actually there's like a thing, like especially with Koreans, they don't stink. like they actually have, they don't produce the enzyme that creates stink, so it's actually very hard for them to smell.
Can I borrow that? Because I'm a smelly guy. My wife calls it my musk. It's gross.
Yeah, it's a musk thing. It's like we don't generate the enzyme that makes the musk, so we just tend to not smell. Oh, it takes a long time for us to smell. Yeah, that's a weird Asian thing. Yeah, you can have it if you want.
You know.
I don't know how.
Brought to you by enzymes.
Ooh, yep.
Or not brought to you by enzymes, because you don't have any.
It's not brought to you because you. That's right. I don't have any. Yeah. So yeah. Now that we're. So that was my segment. That's literally the main reason why I wanted to make the podcast, and I will repeat that several times until it becomes a thing. I'm going to ask you a question about X-Wing.
Sure.
What is your faction right now? And why is it not Scum?
Why isn't it Scum?
Yeah. And don't tell me because the faction is bad, because we know that.
Oh, I mean, it's not Scum because I don't particularly enjoy playing Scum fluff-wise.
Yeah.
So, I mean, my two mains have for a very long time been Rebel and Resistance. Right now, I've been playing mostly Rebels right now. It's just they're fluffy and they feel good.
Are you playing Han? Or are you not playing Han?
I won my sword championship with Han. He's very good, and I was trying to take the thing that I thought gave me the best shot at winning a sword champ. Very high, I would say high floor and high ceiling lists, right? And so I won my sword champ with Han, Luke, Keo, and Fen Rao. Mm-hmm. Fen Rao in the not Sheathipede, the Fang.
Of course,
the Fang. And that was super fun. That was really, really, really enjoyable. I think the thing that's pulling me more towards Rebel than anything else is I get to play is Battle of Yavin Luke is just a lot of fun to play. And Keo is a lot of fun to play.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think Luke is, I don't know if Luke is fun to play, but he's certainly effective.
I think he's fun. I really do. It's not just the Proton Torps either. For me, it's the attack speed on him, which is really
cool. You like to jam in for free.
Yeah, like just shoving him in, like the slow roll and then speed up when you need to is like it just is nice, right? It just offers something that, I mean, he could obviously do something like that, like focus boost before with the S foils, but this is just different. You can attack speed and still get your lock, and you can attack speed while holding a crate. He just is.
Ooh, that's not an action.
It's not. So it's.
Oh, that's actually interesting.
Yeah, the four forward attack speed, like it is a good way to just get out of dodge if you've got a crate.
Because I always think of like attack speed as like, oh, it's just a really crap version of the S foils. But I guess not. I guess it does have utility in some cases.
It definitely does. Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot better than you think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess so. I mean, obviously you love Keo. I love Keo. We're squadron players. We're kind of obligated to love Keo.
That's true.
It's like in our contract. Like when you sign the EULA, agree to the EULA, you automatically agree that Keo is the best. When you play him in X-Wing. Do you sideslip a lot? Do you just try to sideslip constantly when you're playing, or do you hold back?
I would say that it's not like a trying or not trying thing. It's just a dial option.
Sure. But
like, that being said, a lot of times sideslip is the best dial option if it's available to you.
Sure.
It does feel bad when you're hoping that you can sideslip the next turn and you're rolling defense dice and attack dice and you never get the eyeball to spend your force to turn it on. That does feel a little bad. But I found with Keo, banking too much on knowing that you'll have a sideslip next turn can be a bit of a trap, but sideslips tend to catch even the best players off guard blocking wise sometimes. And I actually won a game in that maybe I shouldn't have won because I was able to sideslip block an opposing Fen Rao and blow him up. Mm-hmm. Because they didn't see the two turn sideslip as an option for me.
Do you because prefer...
I was able to two turn sideslip then boost or roll or something into a spot that he didn't even think I could get to with Kyo.
Mm-hmm. Do you prefer concussion missiles or do you prefer juke?
I prefer juke because it disincentivizes people to attack Kyo. With conk missiles, you have to take a lock, which leaves your only offense your force, or your only defense that one force. Whereas mm-hmm. with juke, it's kind of an extra deep. It helps your offense almost as much in the long run, and it's an extra bonus because no one really wants to shoot at an A-wing with force evade. I could see a lot of situations where you'd shoot at an A-wing with just force.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that I think juke is the way to go with Kyo, and I feel pretty strongly about that.
Mm. Have you tried any dash?
I haven't even bought the new box. No, I haven't. I haven't played X-Wing since Dash came out, actually. I've been playing a lot of Lorcana lately and
Lorcana stuff.
So I will say I did win my first store championship with a dash, but I tend to not enjoy flying large bases if I can avoid it.
Interesting. Not a large base fan. Why is that?
I like the idea of dogfighting, and the large bases feel a little less like zippy, you know. I've always preferred the smaller ships. Like if I played 5 A-wings for forever, and I've often thought about putting 5 A-wings back on the table again, and it might be something as like a funsy squad that I do is just mm-hmm. put those 5 A-wings on and zip them around. Because it's just you can get 5 really good Rebel A-wings on the table.
Yeah, you can.
Like 5 really good ones that can punch.
I don't even think that's bad. You know? I don't even think that 5 A-wings is a bad list.
I don't think it's bad, but like, why would I put an A-wing on the table for when the same cost I could just put Luke on the table, like one of those 5 pointers?
Fair. But you could just do 4 A-wings plus Luke.
You could. No, yeah, absolutely. That's something I would love to try at some point. Large bases just don't play the way that I want to play, I guess. But I have often flown them because they are the thing that enabled me to win. So
That's fair. So I want to know as well, because like I just never got a chance to ask you this question of like when you're picking a list. I mean, a lot of the time I know that you're picking the list just because you don't have time and like you're just like, this one. But I know that there's been lots of opportunities where we've talked about lists and you've been like, oh, I want to, like, I like this or I like that. If you had time, do you have a thought about like what kind of things that you would want to put into type of list that you'd want to fly? Like a selection process.
If we're not talking about good and we're just talking about what I no. want.
Well, what you want.
What I want is I need to put stuff together that I can see a story in my head about, like why the characters are working together, what the plan is. Like I could actually see a world where, you know, Han and Luke and Fen and Kyo are off on some sort of mission together, you know, maybe just post Return of the Jedi or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like some sort of Mandalore thing or whatever. I don't know. But I always want to have some sort of zippy maneuverable ship, not necessarily an ace, but just something that can move. And I guess the ships, I have to like them. Like I love X-Wings and I love A-Wings. And if I could just make squads with just X-Wings and A-Wings, I probably would and just play those ad nauseum. And I have done that. I have mm-hmm. done lots of squads with just X-Wings and A-Wings. It's great. But for a lot of time, that's just been a little undercooked. Mechanic wise, I tend to be a guy that gravitates towards squads that are that can win against anything but aren't the best at anything. Like a jack of all trades squads that give me a lot of flexibility on the table because it helps me leverage my in-game tactical options. I've never been really great at taking squads that have one game plan that just beats, like just absolutely beats up people early on and is, you know, it, those on meta stuff. Not to say I haven't practiced those. The squad that I just flew, I got help from some really talented X-Wing players helping me with my setup and my approach that allowed me to just bully other people pretty much. But if it were up to me, I would just play stuff that's pretty, gives me a lot of options.
This, the thematic thing is really interesting. Do you think that, like, because like for beginner players, right? Like obviously like top competitive players are picking whatever they think is like the best opportunity to give them the most chance of success. But you think that when you people start, you think that's like a common thing that people like are trying to pick narratively what is the like the most interesting stuff to them? Because that's like an interesting position to take. It's not one that I personally have thought of.
I think people have to find their enjoyment in the game. And for a lot of us playing this, not all, like some people just view this game as like a spreadsheet. What kinds of characters you're putting on the table matters. Playing your favorite character, having Luke Skywalker blow something up is cool. But picking, and this is the other thing that I kind of got a little up in arms about when people were like, my generics are gone. Most of the named pilots in the game are basically generics. Like, you don't know who Roby Tice is. Like, you don't know who Joff Seastriker is. Like,
hey, those are just basically generics. Don't lore shame me. Come on now.
Do you know who Joff Seastriker is?
No, I have no idea.
No, you have no idea. He's a generic. He's basically a generic. Star Wars has a long storied history of giving names to people who've had screen time for 1 second. So I personally do not lament the loss of the generics in the game at all, in any way, shape, or form. Because if you want that, you can just pick a named shitter that you don't know and just they're the generic. That's the person, right?
Yeah.
That's maybe a little more harsh than it should be towards people who just want to play a squad of Red Squadron veterans, but I don't know, man. Like, there are a lot of character names that people don't know about. And then I'm someone who likes hero ball. Like, I like taking the heroes. I like taking characters that I know. I've always felt bad taking characters who I don't know when I play.
I really want to like dig down this hole a little bit more. So like, because I mean, obviously I have the same opinion. I mean, I only fly like low. That's not true. I don't only fly, but like I choose to fly low ship counts with like a bunch of upgrades and like name piles with tons of abilities, right? But I think it's really interesting because what has been usually the argument of for it has always, I think traditionally has been, oh, like I don't want to think about abilities too difficult, too hard. I want everything to be like really simple and straightforward.
Dad squads. Or
dad squads. I didn't want to say it, but yeah. Or like I want to like thematically fly a bunch of like no namers, right? I feel like, okay, so the no-namer thing is like maybe a lore thing, which you've kind of like debunked a little bit, right?
Right.
But the dad squad thing, I don't actually feel like that's a real complaint. Like, I don't know if you feel the same way as me, but I always feel like, okay, but you could build a list that doesn't require a lot of interactions anyways. And most dad squads, even if they want them to be even remotely competitive, still requires you to have some sort of like funky mechanic. Like, for example, for Star Vipers, right? That was like in 2.0. That was a competitive list, but you had to really understand how to fly Star Vipers. They're not easy ships to fly. So I don't even think you could call that a dad squad, right? Like, do you feel the same way as I do on this?
I mean, no. A dad squad is something that's like, you don't have to remember. It's not that difficult to fly and you don't have to remember any triggers, right? It's got a low barrier of thinking in order to play. And I don't mean that pejoratively. I mean, it is like a just one straight, throws a lot of dice. They all do the same thing, you know, mechanically not that difficult to know or understand. Yeah. You know, like five X-Wings, like five generic X-Wings is like the dad, or 4BZ in the 1.0 days is like the dad squad.
Classic dad squad. Yeah. But I feel like those are never good anyways. So if they're like, or maybe they were good, but like in 1.0, but like traditionally those squads have not been top tier lists regardless. So there's actually no reason.
That's the crux, right? A lot of the stuff that people lament, they're just doing it in poor faith, right? They're like, but I want to play this thing. It's like, well, guess what? You can. No one's stopping you at a non-competitive event from flying, you know, all these generics because they're extended. You can fly it. You can play anything you want if it's not extended. If I'm sounding a little mean here, I don't, you know, it is a little bit mean, but
no, get mean, Ryan. No one's seen your mean side. Like, I want to see it.
Most of these pet projects that people are unhappy about aren't competitive anyway. So quit your bitching, you know, like if you're not playing a highly competitive, if you're not doing something highly competitively, then, or aspiring to be that, nobody is stopping you from playing the game you want to play outside of that.
Sure. Although I think that for some people, like the dream is to fly a list that is like a list that you're interested in flying. It is also competitive, right? But I think it's unfair. I think it's unfair to the game to assume that if you just fly a bunch of generics together, that is somehow going to be competitive against ships that have abilities. It's just like, why would those things be like equitable? Like it shouldn't be, if you just think about the logic of it, right? It's like, it just should not. Like, the whole point of having abilities and flavor text and all this stuff is to add spice and diversity to the game, but it is inherently power creep, right? Because it's like one doesn't have an ability and the other one does, so that then
right
must be. And even if you say like, oh, we'll price it accordingly and blah blah blah, well, no, because we even in 2.0 like generics were just like, if you're just talking about efficiency, even when they were priced granularly, they still weren't winning events regularly. Like any list that was generics that was winning the event, typically you had to fly in a spectacular fashion in order to do so. So it was highly reliant on player skill in order to make it happen. In which case, if they had another list, that pilot would have been able to take them to a victory regardless, I feel like.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
We're angering all of the generic pilots right now. It's gonna be chaos in the comments, which is okay.
I always felt like the generic argument was a poor faith argument anyway. Like, I never really believed that the people who wanted to do that really cared. They're just looking to be mad at something. Well, I think there are a lot of people just looking to be mad at something. Well, let me clarify. I think that there are a lot of people who like the idea of generics and the no names, mm-hmm. like thematically speaking. Yes. Right, that idea that theme-wise, you've got Blue Squadron veterans that are dying, and then each game you play, there are new Blue Squadron veterans that replace them. Right, mm-hmm. like Cody Campbell is one of my really good friends out here, and he plays a lot of Epic. He loves generics. He loves all the you know, the grunts and stuff like that. I understand from a thematic standpoint, people having beef with that being taken out of the game. Okay, mm-hmm. What I don't like is people lamenting like generic spam and the strategy and like that sort of thing from being removed from the game in terms of that being any sort of loss, which I don't necessarily agree with.
Yeah. 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 No, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. And I think that the balance of trying to make it playable. Well, first of all, it is playable. Like I think my point is more that like, generics are not more less playable than they were in 2.0, because they were borderline playable in 2.0, and now they're borderline playable in 2.5. Because there are some lists that you can run generics and it's like not dramatically worse than playing name pilots, right? But it is worse. And so like, because like I also feel like, well, you know, in 2.0 you could have flown five X-Wings, but you could have also flown four X-Wings, except all of the X-Wings were just better and had more upgrades and like things that they could do, and that would be just as good if not better a lot of the times. So it's like I don't know, I don't feel like it's I don't know if I can drink the Kool-Aid on that one, you know?
Yeah, I get that. I get that.
Do you think that if they brought generics back, that it would be actually helpful or not helpful? Like, let's say the AMG was like, you know what? We heard you. Let's bring generics back in some capacity. Do you think that they could do that in a realistically good fashion? Because I actually feel like the answer to that is no.
I don't think that there's a good way to balance that. I think they do need to make the game more like Hero Ball, just more named, you know. I actually think that they should scrap second edition and just make third edition with only standardized cards. That's the team I'm on at the moment. Like, I think
that's a very aggressive take.
I mean, I don't know if the game would survive it. I don't know if the community would implode. Like, I don't know if the games even feasibly could do that. But in my mind, I actually think when AMG took over, they should have just scrapped it and started over and started with new boxes again. The models you have would still work, but if you wanted to like still have those, but just reprint like cards and with models even in them and just start over again with a third edition. I think second edition had a really great long run, and I think it has been, but it's so bloated right now that I actually wouldn't even be opposed to them banning almost all cards or putting in standard almost all upgrade cards and just continually creating more and more standardized loadouts. And I think once we have enough of those, it will, you know, there will be an inflection point. I mean, this is my opinion. Like, yeah. I love Crisis Protocol. I think that there's a whole wealth of the bones of the game with dials and templates and the dice and arcs is still really, really great. Okay. It's exceptional. I think the weakest part of X-Wing has always been how the pilots and upgrades work on the table. And I think standardized loadouts fix a huge amount of the problems that the game have. And I imagine the game would be more interesting if you had a sideboard, kind of like Crisis Protocol, not to create a clone, but like you take a squadron and then every game, you pick from your squadron what you're fielding based on scenarios. And I think that that would be such a more interesting way to play the game. And then you could have like squad leaders that do different things. Like you could assign a squad leader upgrade to somebody that changes how it plays, or I don't know. This is just putting my design hat on. Sure. I love X-Wing where it is right now, but without a doubt, there's no question there is an enormous amount of bloat in it, which creates a pretty big barrier of entry for players.
Right. I guess where I fall on this is that, I mean, I don't think that we need a 3.0 yet. But I also like didn't, weirdly enough, I didn't think we needed a 2.0 when we were in 1.0. So like maybe my opinion isn't as useful here, but I kind of feel like as long as the game doesn't, like the all of the extra stuff doesn't get in the way of that core interaction of setting dials, moving chips around. Because I do think at the end of 1.0, it was getting in the way of the idea of like setting dials, rolling dice, and determining outcome based off of like player skill. So like as long as the game is not getting in the way of that, like I don't really care, maybe is the right way to describe it. Is that like it doesn't really matter if it like, you know, these are like pie in the sky wishes, but like realistically, like I'm already happy as long as those things are still relevant, right? At the end of the day.
And again, I will say that this is me saying all this, acknowledging that I think the game is the most fun it's ever been and the most enjoyable to play on the table as it's ever been. I think objectives are fixed so many things that made me really unhappy about the game. Getting rid of bidding, getting rid of stalling, like the objectives did just enough to just force interesting engagements, and that's all you want.
Yeah. You know what's actually an interesting thought? Because I was explaining, X-Ace, who is one of the moderators on the unofficial X-Wing Discord, right? He asked to fly my Po-List at one of the events during the X-Wing, the side X-Wing extravaganza thing that was happening. And I was explaining to him how the list works. And in doing so, I was also kind of somewhat explaining how to fly like true aces in 2.5, because I think like a lot of people think that that just doesn't exist as an archetype anymore. And like, I think it actually does. In fact, since then, I've kind of like been thinking like what kind of other aces lists can I build in other factions? Because there's actually like kind of a strategy around it where like you can still do a lot of that arc dodgy stuff that makes aces feel so good. But your turn zero is dramatically different, and you kind of have to engineer scenarios in which case you can arc dodge, and a lot of that's around. But yeah, go ahead.
I want to make a distinction, because I think we need to kind of realign what an ace even means in the game anymore.
Well, like, I mean that in the traditional sense. I talk about like 1.0 traditional aces.
Or like double reposition high initiative arc dodger is what you're saying.
Double reposition high initiative arc dodger. That's what I'm saying.
Because like you could argue that like Scum Fen Rao is an ace even though he can't double reposition, right? But like purists would say he's not an ace because he can't do the double reposition. He's a hammer.
Yeah. Well, because so the reason why the double reposition is important is because the double reposition is what allows you to arc dodge in 90% of situations, right? Because it allows you to get out of the way with a barrel roll and then boost to get around, so you can also shoot at them while also not getting shot at, right? There's like a minor stipulation in there as well, is to like also be able to have some way to modify your attack even after you double reposition, right? So we're looking at effectively triple action economy, right? Which is like, you know, that's what the Sunterfels and Darth Vaders of old had, right? And so, like, that's why Fen Rao would not be considered an ace, like, at least to the traditional metric, is because he can reposition and focus, but most of the time, because you can only do one of the two, you're going to be jousting as a result. And he's great at jousting, so like he's an amazing hammer. But he's a hammer. He's not an ace, right?
Yeah.
And so
it's just because one of the big things that aces were always really good at is you could stall out the game a bit and engineer situations where you could control where engagements were happening so that you could control how they're flanking. And the way scenarios are right now is based on initial board setup, you're fairly certain where some sort of initial engage is going to happen. Obviously in chance it's in that kind of range two bubble in the middle. You've got where the crates are set up. The really good players, I think, have figured out in what situations they can focus more on killing and creating engagements away from objectives to benefit them, especially on crates where they can generate crits and just pop them off and trap players that are too objective focused early on in the game.
Right. So here's my conceit. Here's my hypothesis, which is like in counter to this, which is the idea that so I'm going to use, because I don't have any other lists yet, for example, I'm going to use my Poe list as the template for this discussion, right? And maybe there are no other true ace lists right now than the one that I'm discussing, because I do truly feel that this is a actual like real ace list. You're familiar with it, right? Or have you... Or is this like too far back in memory?
It might be. Can you give me you've shown me a lot of lists, so it's hard to remember which one this is.
This is BBA Poe with overdrive thrusters and HLC and Lone Wolf.
Yes. And then, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then it's,
I mean, arguably the best ship in the game, like in terms of, I won't say best because that's not the right word. It's like
I can get you on this. The most utility of any pilot.
Yeah, right.
Right, like he can do everything. He can do anything he wants.
You know what? Let me say this: the most premium ace in the game. Right.
Sure. Like
Right. Like it's the top shelf. Like it's the I don't want to say patron of aces, but you know,
Poe Dameron is a patron of aces. Of this podcast is brought to you by Poe Dameron.
By Patron,
the Poe Dameron of drinks.
That's right.
I get what you're saying. Like he's got an insane package. That's what she said. So, it is. And you know he's a big deal, so.
He is.
So my thought is that, like, you know, you engineer situations. So in turn zero, you can engineer a situation, as you say, to like create a scenario where you know the engage is going to happen, right? But in an aces list, what you're doing is you're setting up flanks in a way where it's very they're very disincentivized to actually like chase that flank, because again, in like so you're kind of like also doing a little bit of social engineering, because like let's say you have a ship that you want them to engage into, and they're like the easiest to engage. Like in my list, it's Neandum, because he's the slow moving X-wing, slow in quotations, moving X-wing that has 7 health and 2 green dice, and you can definitely kill him if you go after him, right? His shenanigans don't start until after he engages in the joust, right? So if you catch him before he gets to 4K and you kill him, then you've eliminated 90% of his value, right? Theoretically. Not really in my list, but theoretically, as you're the opponent, like looking at the list, right? Compared to like a Lulo or a Poe or even Kaz, none of these ships are really the list you want to like spend time killing, because the rest of the list can get behind you, and then you potentially lose value. So it kind of forces them into a specific position. So you're social engineering a situation in which you can create flanks. And then once you do create the flanks and you get behind the list, it's very difficult to disengage because you don't have enough turns, right? So it ends up being that the aces feel like they're aces, in which case like ships are not able to escape them, and you're able to get behind them and do the arc dodging thing, but you've got to do it in a different way than traditionally has been done in previous versions. Well, once you get to that state, you're in that state, and it feels very much like a classic aces matchup.
I think the other thing that's hurt the ace game a lot in the current version of the game is aces relied a lot in earlier versions of the game in cleanup duty. So like as ships are removed from the board, they get stronger the fewer bodies are around, because those fewer bodies can't contend with them. But now that there are more ways to score points, aces aren't always dealing with board states conducive to having fewer arcs, because games can remain close without an opponent destroying a lot of ships. You know, I still think ship destruction is very important in X-Wing, don't get me wrong, but it's not the only important thing. So aces now have to worry longer about more arcs on the table, which is a bit more dangerous for them.
I mean, I think that's kind of true. I think that if you are running an aces list, you kind of need to have exceptional firepower, right? Because I'm agreeing with your point in a sense, because I'm saying that like, if you're just handy running a standard, like a traditional, like kind of like purely ace, purely arc dodging focusing kind of ship that doesn't have a really exceptional output and damage, then you will fall behind in the damage race because you have less ships. And your arc dodging, while it's giving you value and staying alive, is not necessarily helping you win the game. So that is 100% a problem. So the way to counteract that is you need to make sure that the ships that you do have are able to output above average damage output. So we're talking like proton torpedoes, HLC, advanced proton torpedoes, the kind of thing that can push 2 or 3 damage regularly against most types of ships. So that you are on those engagements, you are outperforming your opponent ships on damage, which means that you're probably even on overall damage. And then when you factor in the additional fact that they're not doing damage to you because you're arc dodging them, now you're pulling ahead in the damage race and potentially moving towards that late game state where they have less ships than you. And then now, because you have better quality ships, that means that whatever objective that you are like contesting on, you are going to have the advantage.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with any of that.
Mm-hmm. I think you know, even though we like have a lot of hot takes, and I love those hot takes, I think realistically a lot of these arguments are very nuanced, and they require I don't want to say situational, because I do think you can talk in generalities when you're talking about overall strategy, but it's not like one size fits all when it comes to solutions. Like you have to think like, well, there's like numerous facets or variables that you need to consider when evaluating the overall strategy. And then the weights of those variables also change over the course of the game, right? Which is also speaking to the thing that you like about X-Wing. I think it's one of the most interesting parts about the 2.5 interface is that in 2.0 and 1.0, it was really one tone. Like, there may have been the same number of variables, but the fact that the variables change now over the course of the game, I think that's very interesting, right? And that wasn't really the case in 2.0. 1.0 is once you actually committed to kind of like a course of action of like, what are the variables that are important to me, that doesn't really change throughout the course of the game. The only thing that changes is which ship do I kill now, because that is going to lead me to victory or lead to defeat if I don't.
Well, I think that mm-hmm. that echoes a lot more, I think it's a lot more realistic. And Star Wars is not very realistic, but if we're talking about like war and combat and tactics and strategy, right? Mm-hmm. Rarely, if ever, in a military situation like this, is somebody looking for complete destruction of their opponent. Like, there's always some sort of objective and then a target priority around it. Like, what, you know, we need to cover this airspace and control this airspace so that X can do Y, right? And having to pick your target priority on the other side, I think does a better job reflecting that. And obviously it's not perfect, right? It's a game, but I personally would love a fifth objective. And the one that I keep wanting to exist is there being one on each side that has a health pool that you're looking to
blow up,
shoot down and blow up.
Yeah.
And therefore you have to use resources to blow up that thing. Like, so you're using your shot instead of, so game design wise, we have objectives that burn actions, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have objectives that burn your action flexibility, what you can do, whereas like crate carriers and stuff. We've got area control, but I think burning up your attacks is the next like step in that being like a valid thing, because then you have to decide, am I dedicating my forces to defending my thing, or am I dedicating forces to assaulting their thing, or am I just looking to destroy their ships? And I would say that like the thing you're looking to kill, it would be tough to balance. Like, I don't know how many points it should be, but I think it should be, I don't know, like 15 health and worth like 7 points.
So I love that you've transitioned to this, because now we can both put on our game designer hats. You being a professional board game game designer now, officially, and me being a professional video game designer officially, we can both kind of like put our hats on and like kind of like think about like what would be great for scenario. I love this concept of like shooting something to like score points. I even go as far as to say that like, not, you wouldn't necessarily score points for blowing the thing up, but the act of shooting might be the thing that scores the point, right? So maybe it's health pool, maybe it's not, but like the idea that like spending your attacks to shoot something may be the thing that scores you the points, right?
So here's the mind I have on it, Steven. I like the idea of it being a static one blob of points you get when it's destroyed, because what that allows you to do is maybe take a bit of a defensive, like it's more sporty in that you can take a defensive early game, have them mm-hmm. suck up to you, attempt to engage your thing, you mm-hmm. hurt them, and then towards the mid to end game, you're able to rally, and while they're weaker, come back and move in all at once and destroy it at the end for a comeback mechanic.
Oh, this sounds, you know what I just realized? This just sounds like tower defense. So like, this sounds like tower defense, right? You go into, essentially, you're going to destroy their home base, and they're going to destroy your home base.
Right, I mean, that's basically
base. It. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically like League. kind of, right?
You know what? No, it's squadrons.
I mean, it is squadrons, except it's, there's no taking turns.
Yeah, yeah. There's no ebb and flow. There's no minions. Although, honestly, we could have, like, you could have one object. If we're talking about five objective placements, right? We could have one home base on each side that they place on their side of the board, right?
Yeah.
We could have a kind of one that they place on their side of the board that is a turret that kind of like acts as a protection, right? That can shoot or something like that. Yeah. And then you could have a neutral one that's like a free, that like you rush the center to like score free points. That's like the yeah. That's like the.
And I don't think that there's anything wrong with any of that. I think that because the game is so bloated, you have to create scenarios that are as idiot proof as possible. You know,
that's just good game design.
Right. But I think just having one on each side, not even like, mm-hmm. like barely even placeable, like you're just placing it. Like, I think it should be at range one of your board edge. And that's your limit.
And so
you can't even like it would be like the capital ship, basically. Like, you can't go past that board edge to like circle around it or orbit around it. You right. have to like do runs at it because it's so close to that board edge. It would imply that like you can't go too deep or you'll just auto die because that's where the rest of the fleet is. You have to come mm-hmm. in and dance around where that is. Mm-hmm.
This sounds like late game squadrons. This actually sounds like late game squadrons.
I think that that's thematic, though.
Which is fine. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah. And it would also like be able, that's the kind of objective, more so than the other ones, that really incentivizes going wide on your squads, having more yes. bodies, because yeah. There's literally two different distinct things you're attempting to do.
Yeah.
And I don't know. This is just I think a lot about what that fifth scenario should be and if we ever got one or whatever. And I think this would be different enough that it would really add a lot to the game.
Didn't AMG go on record saying that they wanted to do like a fifth and potentially a sixth scenario?
They said, I did think that they are, it's something in the long term they would like to do, but who knows when, right?
Right. Because I know that they said that their reasoning was not the same as our reasoning. I think our reasoning is that if you're playing a five game event, that you want to have one objective for each round, right? But their reasoning was that they didn't want to have it so that stuff repeated, right? I mean, just kind of similar kind of.
I think that five is the magic number because most tournaments of X-Men are going five rounds, so you do one with no repeats.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I know that you have to go soon. I would have loved it if we could have talked a little longer because actually, like, the conversation was getting really spicy.
It was getting spicy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But maybe we can just have you back on another time, and we can continue this on then.
If you want me on like once every 6 months or something, sure. Like, I'm game. Like dial me up at once every
no,
six
Ryan,
months.
No, Ryan, I want you on the podcast every day because that's the only way I can get to talk to you.
I promise I will make more time to hang with you.
I know you will. I'm just sassing you because it's fun to sass you. Let me ask you one last thing before you go. Do you think Diyun has added anything productive to add if I ask him onto the podcast?
I absolutely think he does, especially because he owns a game store now. Check out Games at My Place.
Does he actually?
SoCal.
He actually started his store.
Yeah, Games at My Place in Pasadena. So it's pretty awesome. I think he has a lot to say on the more organizational judging side of things, and he's been playing X-Wing longer than I have too. So, yeah.
Do you play? Do you play at his store now?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's super interesting. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ryan, for coming on. Do you have anything you want to shout out other than D-Store?
I mean, shouts to you, right? Shouts to the Fly Better Facebook community and the mods there that are still keeping that going as a resource to players. I don't know how long that'll exist, but I've handed it off.
Can I steal them? Can I have it?
I don't think I can hand it to you, no, because I think we're looking to destroy it at some point in the future. But shouts to Mitch, Ken, Chris, Alex, I guess Seely, because he's in the mod chat, for doing a really good job managing that as a resource. I guess also shouts to the X-Wing community because they're awesome. The Crate community, which continues to be a bastion of really, really good positive things for the game.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you again. For everyone listening, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye.